You're listening to Within Our Reach, a podcast by Reachability Association about accessibility, inclusion, and leveling the playing field at work and in our community. In today's episode, we're talking about ADHD in the workplace. Join us as myself and our very special guest try and fail to avoid interrupting Shelley Albert-McLeod at every possible turn. Enjoy the episode. Today, I am joined by my co-host. Hello, Shelley.
Hello. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. I don't know if I gave my name. I'm Blake. Hello. If you've been listening, you know who I am at this point. But we have a very special guest today. We have the big boss lady is in the chair today. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. The big boss lady has a name, and the name is Tova.
That is true. Tova Sherman, CEO of Reachability. Thank you for joining
us today. Thank you. Really excited, actually.
Well, this should be a pretty easy easy episode for all of us to discuss too, because we're talking ADHD in the workplace, and that's kind of our jam. That's kind of
it's beyond our jam. It's our jam, our peanut butter, and the bread.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
a full meal deal.
It's called us coping Monday through Friday. Yes, yeah. That's what this is.
Yeah. And in our office, it's particularly interesting because there is a real large percentage of people living on the ADHD spectrum. Whether you know, somebody yesterday said, "Well, I think I might be more ADD than ADHD," and just right out the gate, want to share with everyone one spectrum, whether it's ADD or ADHD, we tend to call it the ADHD spectrum. A spectrum is like a rainbow without all the color.
Yeah.
You've got your mild, you've got your medium, you got your severe. Back to you.
Well, I think that's a good thing to point out of the gate too, is because a lot of people will hear what that H stands for, and they're like, well, I don't know. You don't seem to be bopping all around the office. You don't seem to be hopping up out of your desk every 5 seconds. It's like, okay, if you could take a look inside my head, you would see where the hyperactivity manifests itself. Those thoughts are speeding very fast. So yeah, it's not something that people might recognize. They don't know what to look for.
I'll
they're
tell
not
you
seeing
what,
the things they think.
The
they
reason
be.
They don't know what to look for is it manifests so differently. We'll get to that, I know, but I just had to slide that in.
Absolutely. I think that's key. Well, first off, if you see me running out the door, although we're on a podcast, but if I'm just asking, it's because, you know, the two of them just overtook the conversation.
This has never happened before.
Exactly. So I feel like now I'm going to have to keep both of you in line today.
We have little styrofoam stress balls in the shape of rocks, so you can actually throw rocks at us if we start going too far.
But I wanted to say right out of the gate, like I just wanted to touch on that. And I know we're going to get into the in-depth piece. Absolutely. I do a lot of accessibility, accommodation requests, and very much so. Like we're talking about a spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. Once again, okay, as you know, Blake, you and I've talked with a lot of our guests, there's no one size fits all. Mm-hmm. And I think Tova will likely get into that. It'll manifest itself differently, you know, in the workplace, mm-hmm. right? It's going to be important that employers recognize that. And it's not just because this person has ADHD and you know somebody else with ADHD, you can't assume their needs are going to be exactly the same.
Right. And if you think off the top of your head, well, someone with ADHD, surely they have trouble working in an office environment. Well, we're talking to the CEO of the agency we're sitting in here.
Correct.
Who has a terrible time working in an office environment. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to blow your lead in. But the truth is, it's very challenging, but it's something you manage with a combination of self-care, whatever that looks like. And if we have time, we can discuss
That's really what we want to talk about today,
is
coping in the workplace.
Great.
I think that's absolutely great. That
I should have read my notes, right?
People don't realize, right?
Why start now?
And this is something that, you know, Tova has talked about a lot, that, you know, likely everybody has some type of disability, mm-hmm. right? Or some type of limitation or something they have to work around. And I think that was really a good lead-in where Tova said, I have to work in an office all day and the struggle is real. Mm-hmm. But what are the coping mechanisms? What's the self-care that we put in place?
Yeah.
So I think that is key because it is a two-way street. It's not just all about the employer. It's not all about the employee.
And we do expect accommodations from the employer. We're at that stage that we do. But you're right. There's a lot of self-management that's
I think it's required. I think it's real. Tova, why don't you start by telling us what are some of the things that you, okay, as a person living with ADHD, because I think you didn't get to identify, Blake identified for you that you had ADHD.
Yeah, that was nice.
You better
now. Sorry about
Thanks,
that.
Blake. I'm kidding.
We're a little open about it.
Around here, it's not a big secret.
No. And I think that's, you know, that's healthy as well. Mm-hmm. But why don't you talk to us about, from your perspective, right, over the years, what are some of the things that you've experienced?
I probably could do a shorter list of what I haven't experienced, but what I will, because it has been a very diverse, I'm 62, and I'm not going to lie, I've experienced so many things. Some of them are frankly as a result of my impulse control issues, meaning because I'm on that ADHD spectrum, and because I do self-identify as being quite severe based on the testing and so on, and behaviors, I can honestly say that I've had some incredible experiences. And they've all taught me a little something, but I don't always learn the lesson as well, maybe as the way other people do. You know, it was described so well to me, our brains. You mentioned just a bit earlier about that sort of ADHD, the hyper part, the H, you know, and what's that mean in our brains. And really, it was described to me that the brain of people on the spectrum of ADHD, like myself, is like a, not like a hyper versus a metronome. You know, when you're trying to set up your piano and it goes bing, bing, bing. Well, take that metronome, which is the majority of people's normal brain waves, like a metronome style.
Yeah.
And then there's us, ADHD. It's like boom, 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 beep, 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 beep. Yeah. Boop, boop.
Yep.
It's like a little bit of jazz. I think bebop came out of somebody with ADHD.
It's faster and there's no defined.
That's right.
Forth,
and there won't be necessarily
no
a pattern.
Yes.
That's the point.
Yep.
So it's really one of the challenges in trying to figure out how does my ADHD spectrum disorder, you know, how does my disability, because I'm not particularly destroyed by that word, but how does my disability work? Because nobody, as you said, is going to necessarily teach it to you because everyone's different. Although I do believe, and I think studies would show, that the majority of people living on that spectrum have a parent. It might be more subtle. They might be better managed. Of course, we don't see our parents the same way as young, young children. We may not catch things.
The parent may not be ready to acknowledge that they have.
Well,
those
we've talked
very
about
obvious
that one.
Symptoms.
But it's true. You get a lot of, especially with my parents' generation, who would be in their late 80s now, I would get a lot of the what disability? I don't have a disability because just, you're supposed to tough everything out.
Right.
So
correct.
I really want to say that for me, and I know I got off your question, which is ADHD of me, but I really wanted to kind of open up my thoughts with how does it manifest for me? It's very hard for me to stay on focus.
Okay.
And that's probably in a workplace my number one challenge. But the number one question I get, Shelley, around workplace and ADHD is, should I tell them?
Yes.
And I really want to talk about this for 2 seconds and you can push me back. But this is
an important starting
disclosure.
Starting point,
yes, no. I have a very simple way of figuring out whether or not you have to disclose. It's very simple. Is it or is it not? Honestly, authentically, you have to look this over, do the old pro-con list, whatever. Mm-hmm. But is it or is it not going to affect my work?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If you work isolated, forgive me, Shelley, but if you work isolated in a cottage and do your own thing, you don't have to disclose your ADHD spectrum disorder if you don't care to. But I couldn't go into a job today, yesterday, no matter what, and not mention it because they would see things that I do differently, ways I use language differently that might tip people into a place that otherwise people may have been more aware and read your signals and all of that.
Yeah.
Although we are good signal readers, but if we happen to open our eyes and look, but that's a different
issue. It's true. We're very intuitive. We pick up the clues very quickly.
There's an empathic element to it, I think.
Right.
But anyway, what are you thinking, Shelley?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Tovi, you and I have been on this. We've done other, trainings on disclosure.
Yeah.
And I am, it is very simple. I get asked that question all the time working with individuals, should I disclose? And for me, it's really about, is there going to be an impact on your job, right? An impact, you know, that, you know, you're not going to be able to control without other people seeing, right? And sometimes it's, you know, it's about knowing more about the business, like maybe it's knowing more about where your office is going to be, that might be how it impacts you.
Yep.
But in the case of, and I've dealt with a lot of people who have ADHD, and I've said, you're likely going to need to disclose because you're in the workplace.
Exactly.
And it doesn't matter whether you have a job that's on a production line, in a customer service, right? Sitting at a desk, right? There's going to be different ramifications and different pros and cons to each of those situations, mm-hmm. but you're going to need to disclose. It's going to be very obvious. And if you have a supervisor who has not dealt with ADHD before, mm-hmm. they're going to see that as performance issues or behavior, yeah. attitudinal things. And you're likely going to be in conflict from day one.
Which I think we should point out is not something that we're not shading that manager who doesn't have that sort of experience.
No, because absolutely.
As someone who was diagnosed late in life, I didn't get diagnosed until the past year.
Right.
The vast majority of things that I now am well aware are ADHD symptoms and I'm able to manage to an extent used to be filed under terrible personal flaws I can't overcome. So if I'm being that right. judgmental about myself from a place of ignorance, how am I supposed to expect someone who's never encountered this in the workplace before right. to assume that I'm coming from a place of genuine effort and that this is really what I can do and not just, you know, screwing the poop.
And that's why your question, what strategies do you have and how do you do things? And I right. just want to go back to a very simple statement. People don't come with instructions. Mm-hmm. And the correct. Reason I have to repeat that is because everyone at home may hear something that they connect to maybe from Blake's explanation or mine around, you know, some of the things that we live with on the spectrum. But the truth is, the only way we get strategies is through, well, really, two steps. Step one, self-awareness. Yeah, exactly. We've got to get to know ourselves. Oh, we've got to understand the fact that we've got some quirky things based on the mainstream way of doing things. Mm-hmm. Even my use of language, I catch myself all the time. People do not always understand what I mean. And I'm a, kind of a little like, what's wrong with them? And I've had to learn that no one understood what I meant. I've got two sisters who've listened to me my whole life. Trust me, their whole lives. Well, I'm the youngest, so my whole life. And I've got to tell you, they go, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what's wrong with you? And I have to realize in Tova, not in everybody, but there's this assumption of people understanding me, but they aren't in my head. How could they know yeah. all those elements correct. That took me to this place?
I am notorious
yet it's
for...
one of those things I do mm-hmm. that I have to watch, especially Shelley in the workplace.
Absolutely. And I think you, I want to tie that back into Blake, what you said about the supervisor, like let's knock it down like yeah. on the supervisor because people don't know, but I really think it's about a whole self-reflective mm-hmm. piece, mm-hmm. right? It's, people don't know what you don't know. That, you know, Tova said they don't come with instruction manuals on that. And that's people, both as supervisors as well, because they likely haven't been given the skill set. Yep. And if you think about as, you know, as Tova said, 62, I can relate. I'm the same age.
Shelley, you look great. I don't know if people listening to us know this, right. but you look great for your
age. So do you.
Your skin's fantastic.
You two keep this up all the way over here being a baby.
All right, go ahead.
So, but I think that's an important piece because if you have a supervisor mm-hmm. who's, you know, likely from our generation, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Depending on what they've seen in their life and how many opportunities mm-hmm. that they have had, if they've worked for the same organization in the same field, I mean, their parents may very well have had ADHD mm-hmm. or whatever, but people didn't talk about it.
That's no, for sure.
Right? It was not yeah. diagnosed. It was not there. I don't even think it had a name, right? So there is a bit of ignorance, right? Mm-hmm. And that's through no fault. But I think there needs to be self-awareness and self-reflection.
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely number
it's
one.
It's my biggest thing in yeah. every know single you. Employee. I don't care whether, like, you know, as a manager or a supervisor, when you're looking at an employee who's acting out, acting differently, doing things differently from mm-hmm. you, as opposed to doing that jump the gun and what the heck is wrong with them, yeah. right? I tell people, take your finger first and point it back at yourself. And
yeah. like, what assumption am I making about the root cause of
right,
that behavior?
Like how about yeah. if we need to have a...
Why am I calling this energetic, industrious person lazy during right. these hours of the day?
And
every
that's
day?
Where self-management is being the next step, because you can know all this, but if you're not applying your self-awareness, which is, of course, really who you are and how things affect you right. and what are your yeah. triggers, then you walk into a space and you're all pissed off at everybody. You got to look at the yep. common thread. And sadly, in my life, many times it has been me. And I've had to acknowledge that.
This is why I want to kind of dial this back a tiny bit, too, because yeah. just to where we're talking yeah. about the principle you need to disclose if it's going to affect your job, automatically in our heads, I think we spin that in a negative way. If it's going to impact your job, that you're not going to be able to do certain things, you're not going to be able to focus quite as well, you're not going to be able to manage. there could be a very positive impact on your job just by saying the words, by the way, I have ADHD. When we talk about in this office, if someone says, by the way, I have ADHD, well, first of all, much more comfortable and related.
Because it's like back of the line. It's not unique in our office.
But also, we can teach them coping mechanisms they may not have ever encountered themselves. Right. I like to use myself as an example here because when I started here 4.5 years ago, I didn't know I had ADHD. I hadn't been diagnosed. And the way that this came up as a path to diagnosis was you and I had a conversation
where I just said from day one.
I just said something about how I had never been diagnosed with ADHD, but I thought I saw some of the symptoms in myself. And she just literally stopped and stared at me and said, Are you kidding? Like, no, you do. I know there's lots of talk of, ADHD is overdiagnosed, blah, blah. No, it was underdiagnosed forever. It is extremely common. And
we're just catching up.
And you can see those symptoms in each other. You really can relate to your employer or your manager that way in a way that can make your work life much more positive. So it doesn't have to be a negative that you're worried about. You can disclose to get the positive results, to get the benefits.
I don't think I think part of self-management, okay, part of self-awareness, part of understanding yourself, okay, is in how you explain it, right? Mm-hmm. Because I usually will tell people, assume your supervisor has no idea, has never heard the term ADHD before, mm-hmm. right? When you're explaining, I have ADHD. You're not saying it in a negative connotation because there isn't a negative connotation. Mm. I would talk about, it's likely, I may lose focus at different times, but my creativity, my ability to think outside the box, mm-hmm.
Is a win for the employer.
Very mm-hmm. much a win.
Yeah.
Win for this, right?
Yeah.
Also, it's likely I'm not going to be hiding things. I'm going to want to be very mm-hmm. collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So using some of those skills, those, as Tova described, outspoken, mm-hmm. right?
Articulate.
Yeah. Right? Use those skills to explain how it might manifest itself and the positives. So I really do like that, Blake, is that not sticking to the negatives because, there isn't a negative. Mm. I don't think there is a negative. Good Lord, if we asked every single person, to talk about some of their faults, mm-hmm. And started to look at that as a negative.
Or challenges. I was just going to say,
everybody has challenges.
Every employee, and you're the HR expert, Shelley, correct me, every employee needs some form of accommodation. All you're doing is letting them know you did the work to know yourself and to know what you require versus sit there and just kind of in the water, paddling in the water and not moving. And somebody goes, finally, why are you still paddling?
Yeah. You're honestly the easier employee to help in that respect
because you have that knowledge.
Everybody needs some form of accommodation. Right. But if I come to you and say, I have ADHD, this is a studied thing. I fall within the general parameters for people with ADHD in this sort of area. You can look in a book in a paragraph and a half and find out 5 or 6 or 7 different things you can do to make me more productive in the workplace. Whereas
knowing it first, though, and educating the employer, because we keep talking about they don't always have, what's your expectation of them knowing?
Yeah.
Well, the answer is if your expectation is the same expectation of what you've put in, if you haven't bothered, don't expect them to bother. It's not their problem.
And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, sorry. I was just going to say, if you're an employer who doesn't feel the need or doesn't understand why they would be willing to take the time to understand a person with
ADHD.
Are
you the correct employer to work with?
Well, more importantly, I would like you to have a crisis in your workplace and then look around and see who's walking around in a state of shock with their head half cut off and who is absolutely chill and dealing with things like there's not a fire going on whatsoever because it's the ADHD person who is just coping totally fine. They may not cope totally fine at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when someone's scheduled a meeting like their worst enemy. But when there's an actual emergency, I find ADHD people often were generally more calm, cool, and collected at that point.
Well, allow me to say this. I think it's extremely important, and just following on your statement, Shelley, that the employer understand, and of course your original statement, Blake, which is that there's positives here. Mm-hmm. For instance, I may lose focus sometimes, but I always make my deadlines.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the
message. You're so anxious about not making problems.
Well, but that's a perfect example of me because mm-hmm. I have a lot of deadlines. We've been doing grants lately and they're all like next week, this week, Friday, Tuesday. All the letters come in?
Yeah.
And we work on that quite a bit. And I think that I understand those deadlines, even if I'm not doing it in the way or within the time not within the time frame, yes, but in the way that they want to do it. Like I'm working at night, not necessarily in the morning, but the work will be done. And if I was speaking to an employer, I would just keep emphasizing my deadlines are always met. Yeah. And that's what they need to hear.
Yeah, and really at the end of the day, that's what the employer wants. I mean, I think part of it is, I've talked about this before, that employers, supervisors, managers, whatever, are intimidated by what they don't know, mm-hmm. right? So they're tasked with ensuring that the job gets done, mm-hmm. right? And they're about to hire somebody who they don't know whether they're going to require accommodations that might limit their ability to get the job done. So mm-hmm. I think it is important that we have that. But it also allows for a genuine conversation between you and the supervisor up front in the beginning, because it allows the supervisor to ask questions. What do you need? Like, and you can go through the job description. Like, what are the things, okay, where you're going to need support? Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I think is, and I want to say this for all the managers and supervisors out there, people with ADHD, okay, are very good at actually telling you what they need, yes. right? Yeah. Unlike when you're in a performance management, okay, meeting, okay, or some disciplinary meeting with an employee, okay, who you've had issues with, and it's about them coming late or attendance management issues.
Keep going, I'll be right back.
Yeah. These are big things, right? Where the employer doesn't know how to deal with it. Like you're asking questions and the employee doesn't know how to solve it. With ADHD, you likely ask the question of what supports do you need? They're going to tell you, just like you said, Tova, I'm going to say, I'm going to get the job done. I might need to work different hours. But
deadline, your need, your deliverables... Right. Are doable
exactly
by the process I've put into place. It just may not be your process.
Absolutely. So
that's the message.
So I think, you know, bottom line is, you know, in the workplace, if you have ADHD, right, it is going to impact your job in some mm-hmm. way, right? You need to disclose, right? Mm-hmm. But do it in a positive way.
Know yourself first. Yep. Write down some key pluses. I mean, I write things down because that's how I remember them.
Yes.
But by hand, not by computer. So for me, I'm like, I always have a little scribbler and I write in it.
This is actually a really good, let's try to rapid fire this because I think this is a good thing we can do here that will be really practical for people. You carry a notebook with you everywhere and so do everywhere. I in this office. We just can't.
It's the pen I keep looking for.
I tell people whenever someone says, oh, Blake, can you do this for me tomorrow? Yeah, absolutely.
Send me an email.
And I tell them to their face, if you do not write it down, it will not happen. This is something, an accommodation I know about myself. It's very simple and I'm very blunt with everybody, but it makes a tremendous difference in my work life. Some of the practical coping mechanisms that you do in the office?
I could tell you, I reject small Post-its.
Okay,
because
why?
I asked someone to write them down, but they wrote them on a little loose Post-it that's the size of my thumbnail.
Oh, and those will fly off your desk and be in the trash can.
So, you know, again, being emphatic about it has to be done by email so that you can't, literally, I can't lose it.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's really important to
Very
me.
Important.
So what are some of my quick, how am I handling that?
Yes. Mm.
Okay. First and foremost is I'm constantly looking at my day.
Yes.
To the point where anyone else would probably go, have you got nothing better to do? But I have to look at my day because for me, I have to generate in my brain what I want to do with each thing. Mm-hmm. Then I start writing those notes in my scribbler before the meeting. If I know I'm meeting Shelley on an HR piece of business, I will write, I mean, you've made fun of me a little bit because I will write out my feelings. Mm-hmm. I will write out why I'm upset. I will write out what I think, having reflected pros and cons. I'm obsessed, as you know, with a whiteboard. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I used to joke if I had a whiteboard in the bedroom, I can't tell you what might have happened. But I love a good whiteboard.
That's another episode.
Listen, no one picture the diagrams is all I have to say.
No, there won't be any pictures with this conversation for sure. But I really love a whiteboard because I have an idea. I have a lot of ideas. If anything, somebody should curb the edge on those ideas. But I do have a lot of ideas. And a lot of them have to be shot down by my team who go, that's nice, forget it. Because I have a lot of ideas.
Which on that front,
Hence the whiteboard. I got to flush them out.
That is something that this is interesting because that's almost something that as a manager and as a CEO, you have to disclose to your team because we have a couple people here and I don't want to throw anyone under the bus,
but
I'm sure you're going to understand.
I'll know exactly who it is. We're not that big.
We have some people who are, I don't want to call them neurotypical and assume, but generally more so than you and I are anyway, but also very professional, very point A to point B type people.
It's a straight direction.
And Tova occasionally will come into one of these people's offices, sit down. You know, I see the look. You know what I'm talking about now.
I know exactly what I'm talking about, yeah.
And just, for lack of a better term,
free flow a bit.
Word vomit on them. A wonderful new plan for a new program that we're going to start and we're going to apply for funding for and we're going to have to hire new people for and possibly rent new office space and blah, 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 blah. And it's a great plan. It won't necessarily happen. If we can make it happen in a year or two, maybe. But this person doesn't have that
I think they thought I was having a stroke because like I was throwing concepts at her and I could see her face just slowly shutting down faster and faster.
Like this is stage one. Right. This is maybe 10% of what we're talking about now will come to happen eventually. But this is just getting us fired up so we can plan for the future.
I like to get people involved.
But this person
thought it was real.
Everything is real as soon as you start planning for it. And for Tova and I often, planning it can be a much more chaotic process until we boil it down to what we're really talking
There's
about.
There's a lot of discussion. I like input. I like people to say why that wouldn't work. Yeah. So I'm kind of asking people different things. And they're like, don't tell me anything's happening until you've got
and
money and a program.
And this employee knows this about you. And even still, we generally have a little minute after some meetings where I go, okay, calm down. This is not happening.
I often leave Blake in the room when I leave. That might be an accommodation.
That's an accommodation. Honestly, I'm we joke about it, but realistically, having someone else on the team who understands your ADHD and who also has it, but it manifests differently.
That's correct.
Can be, you and I wouldn't work together nearly as well as we do if we had exactly the same sort of manifestation of
ADHD. Actually, it would be impossible because I still need other done, not me. I can do me. I don't need another me. God help us. What I need is a you.
So Tova's in a dual position, right? Because you're a leader, okay, who also happens to have ADHD.
Yes.
And in a leadership role, some of these things, right? Because let's think about it, like the hierarchical process, okay? Mm-hmm. Tova walks into subordinate's office and is having a brain dump, okay, about all these creative ideas. The employee thinks, okay, I got to start working on all this. Holy crap, I got to start working on all those things. And what if I think the idea is crazy, right? Because I hear that a lot, okay, and I'm like, well, it doesn't matter that they have ADHD. This is about being able to have healthy dialogue, healthy debate, okay, in the workplace.
So that's some intuition too to parse what you're hearing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And use context clues. Do we have the money, time, and headspace to be doing this right now?
Exactly. It would involve an entire new office.
Exactly. So just
is this a new program we're looking to launch? What do you think? Like start filtering in because Tova and I meet, you know, regularly, and Tova does have her emotions, her whiteboard.
I write it all down.
Yeah. Which I think is great because it allows us to be able to have a very fulsome meeting.
Quickly.
Frankly,
for you? You have such a full and colorful picture of exactly where you're at.
And frankly, if all my clients showed up, with all of that, it would be great, right?
No, but pulling sometimes, teeth to get there,
Yeah, exactly. The thing that I'll let Tova I let Tova describe all the things, right? Then I start questioning.
Yes.
Right?
Which I like.
Which I've learned, okay? Because then that brings it back to reality. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think that's like a real key tip for people that are working with ADHD is that they need to be able to express themselves. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, so when you said, I have lots of ideas. That's great. As a manager, I want you to have ideas, right? But at some point, okay, in the meeting when we've brainstormed, Tova will have brainstormed 100 things more than everybody else, okay? You need to be able to get that back on track. Okay, now let's start looking at some of those ideas. How would we implement? Like, what does that look like? Right? And
this is why we talk about hiring people with disabilities like this, because your team is so much stronger. when you have that person who is firing off all those creative ideas, who is building the programs in 15 minutes on a whiteboard, but then you also have other people on the team who are either neurotypical or neurodivergent in another way, who will look at that in a much more analytical way, in a much quieter, fact-based sort of way. The team is stronger. We get so much more done. If we were all a bunch of neurotypicals, we may not have ever come up with the very idea for the program.
I doubt we'd still
be here. If every one of us had ADHD on the team, too, we probably would be spinning our wheels pretty hard. We need that. That person who it sounded like I was making fun of earlier for their reactions to your brain dumps, we tell that person all the time how necessary they are.
One of the most important members of our team.
Yes. The person who drives from point A to point B and can't be interrupted along the way, okay, is your person who's going to implement.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. They're going to implement. They're going to be your project lead because they are going to haul everybody together because they're no nonsense, right? Yeah. And Frank, and I always just, people will say to me, oh, like my finance person is like, just so like this, like, you know, has not flexible. And I was like, yes, that's exactly how
what
I
they
want
should be.
My finance person.
I do not want I don't a creative want to create, financial person.
Right? No, no.
Right. Not so, here. So that kind of what we talk about, like, are there certain jobs, okay, that are better for people with ADHD?
God bless you for getting us back to the questions, right? By
and
the
I
way, I've been thinking
and
I,
so I,
want,
I thought that was a good segue because while I don't think that we should people should limit themselves because people have different life, loves and passions, it's likely, right, that somebody with ADHD, right, is going to have a very difficult time, right, in a job that's very narrow focused.
Yeah.
Right?
Where, absolutely.
Like where assembly line or something. Yeah. Where,
right? All those things that we need diversity, new ideas, new projects to work on.
Yeah.
And I will say, I often say, although we can all do almost anything if we want to bad enough, the truth is I shouldn't be in a library where it's quiet and there's no outbursts allowed or any of that. But now I am a public speaker.
Yes.
Perfect. Technically, if I got up on a stage and spoke, the last place I have to talk about my ADHD is there because I'm perfectly built for this work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the easy part. It's doing the other things, the more challenging things.
Right.
Learning to slow down, because you mentioned all of a million ideas. The problem is I have to slow down so that other people have a chance to get in there too. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the going, and I'm flipping around a little, but going back to what you said, Blake, the sort of, what do you do? What are some of those rapid fire things? The hardest thing I've had to do is slow down so others can not catch up in a weird way, but just get on page with where I am and what's it going to take because they are different thinkers.
Right.
Yeah.
And I, from the person who's looking in, who deals, okay, with the two of you, and others with ADHD, I said it already, is allowing people to get their ideas out. Because one of the, you heard me say, Tova tells me all the things on her little whiteboard before I respond back, right? Because I find that that is key. And frankly, that works for many, many people as a, just a good, as a good getting everybody's voice, like hearing everybody's voice. Because, you know, Tova, when you say you have to rein yourself in, allow other people, I find it's very easy. Allow everybody to get their thoughts out, right? Because once their thoughts are out there and it's on the board, okay, then they can usually settle back. The other thing that I find that, working with people with ADHD, you know, when you're doing a brainstorming session and you're going around the room and you're asking people, okay, give me your first idea first, and you're going to keep going around the room, that doesn't actually work for ADHD people. And it doesn't actually work for a lot of people. They need to give you all their ideas at once.
Yes, yes, thank you. I was just sitting here thinking I would be in physical pain giving you one idea.
Right, how do I pick one? I've got 15 on my list. When are we coming back to me, right? So it's easier.
I can't hear you until I am heard by you. It's so embarrassing to admit that, but it's very true.
But I think that's important. And it's not changing the way we do things. It's just finding a way that's inclusive to everybody.
Yeah. Seems like impatience in that sort of scenario too, on say my part, I'm going to be the most attentive listener and I'm going to be so thoughtful towards your ideas if you can just let me get mine all out first.
Right. Yeah. And frankly, as a leader, we shouldn't be actually dissecting any one idea until all the ideas are on the table, because the really good idea may be still sitting in somebody's head.
That's right.
Or the piece of that idea that we need to actually be successful.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I do think, I want to put a rider on this because I'm always very, very cautious about, you know, what jobs are better for people with ADHD. And, you know, while the job might not be your passion, I do recognize in life, right, that we all have, you know, basic needs, right? Mm-hmm. So there's times in life, okay, where you're likely going to have to take a job, right, to put shelter.
Yep.
Food,
yep.
Okay,
yep.
That may not be the best fit for you,
correct.
Right? So let's take this job of a production line or a manufacturing line, like something that's very repetitive. You're standing there, you're doing widgets, you know, for 8 hours a day, yep. Right? That is likely, okay, not the ideal job, okay, for somebody with ADHD, mm-hmm. Right? But nevertheless, there's going to be somebody with ADHD that applies for that job. Mm-hmm. So as an employer, I think it is important to understand. And if I had ADHD, I would be disclosing so that I could work with my employer. What can I do, right? Yeah. Is this an opportunity? And I talk with manufacturing production lines all the time because repetitive strains are a real thing. Like, is this an opportunity where, okay, every 30 minutes or every hour, we're going to switch four people. Mm-hmm. And it may only be that you're moving from this side of the production line to that side.
Yeah.
But it's...
Some days that's
right?
enough. It's a switch up.
Yeah. Right? And so what are the things that we need to have in place, yeah. Right? And sometimes it's little color, sometimes it's music. Right? So there's still going to need to be things to allow, right, individuals to be successful mm-hmm. while you have them there. And, and sometimes there's small little things as an employer that you can do, and that person may end up being your best employee.
True. I do think, and I mean, I know there's a lot of scenarios where I'm applying for this job, it's 40 hours a week, it's going to be doing the exact same thing for 8 hours a day, and it's going to be very dull. That sounds like a nightmare to me, but sometimes you have to take the job. You've got
right.
bills to pay. You have to
exactly.
leave it.
Yeah. That said, I think... We talk about a lot about two things. We talk about a lot about right person, right job, and how
yes.
important it is to find that fit. But also, we've been talking a lot more lately about playing to your strengths and building on those strengths rather than trying to force yourself to get good at the things you don't have any natural aptitude for.
Right.
I think I would be very hesitant to recommend that person take that job unless they were in the direst of straits, because that person is so suited for a job that someone, a more neurotypical person, might absolutely hate. I say my job a lot of the time is, you know, putting out fires, herding cats, and new choose your own adventure every day, because that's perfect for me. That makes me excited to come to work. When I tell some people that, you can see they just look aghast. That is, having to come in and be inventive and tackle a new fire every day sounds like a nightmare to them. Whereas 8 hours doing the same thing to them would be the most calming zen thing in the world.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, ideally, every organization, both from the employee's perspective and from the employer's perspective, when you have the right person in the right job doing the right thing at the right time, mm-hmm. that is like mm-hmm.
you know
a
what
win,
we
win,
haven't
win,
talked
okay?
about yet, and I just want to, I know we're yeah. running out of time, so I just want to squeeze it in, and that is entrepreneurship.
Yes.
I think it's really yeah. important we talk about it, because you
we
best
can take
practice
some time. This
or
is
next
important.
Practice, whatever you want to call it, the very best practices are trying to find something that fits you. Mm-hmm. And I was reading, interestingly, an article about how many people on the ADHD spectrum end up being entrepreneurs.
Yes.
Out of necessity. Mm-hmm. And I can speak to the fact that I myself didn't always do the best with other people being the boss. And it was one of the reasons, instead of maybe joining an existing NGO, mm-hmm. I made a bit of a scare decision to start one. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to lie to you that it wasn't only because I had ideas that others didn't and all those wonderful altruistic things.
That's because you're sick of being micromanaged.
That's
sure.
right. But the truth was, I didn't like not having my ideas heard.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like the fact that my belief system wasn't being reflected in the values of the places around me.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, Blake, I'm very big on our values at Reachability, mm-hmm. matching the values of the individual who joins us. And in fact,
exactly.
I anytime I talk to people, the first thing I say to potential employees is check out our values and make sure they're your values. And they look at me a little bit strange, and I'm thinking, if you haven't taken the time assess what your values are, mm-hmm. for real. So what I have found, just to get back to it, is that a lot of people on the spectrum are becoming entrepreneurs out of somewhat of a necessity to find a place where they can do their best work and balance that hindrance versus help.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Exactly. And I know for a fact, if I'd have been able to find a place to just plug in, I would have. Also, sometimes we find our experiences through different avenues than just a traditional degree and so on. And yeah, as a result, people often won't get the jobs they're probably able to do because they may not bring what's known as the traditional method of getting that experience, i.e. a BA or a master's.
Yeah.
I've had many people ask me what my master's is in, and I do not have one. And I've even lost gigs over the fact that they found it out. And then they asked me to kind of like, sorry, we don't work with people without masters. But nobody told me that at the beginning. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is entrepreneurship is a really important arm for people. And in today's gig world, mm-hmm. the gig economy, as they've been calling it, although we're shifting a little already, I can see it. But I call it micro enterprise or mm-hmm. micro entrepreneurship. Yes. And it's really where you look in the mirror and say, what do I love to do? And if the answer is, for instance, I like hanging out with dogs, mm-hmm. well, maybe you start a small micro enterprise mm-hmm. by putting up signs on all the posts around the neighborhood that you walk dogs.
Yep.
And you create a micro entrepreneurship opportunity for yourself. And it doesn't have to be huge. And you don't end up having to be the owner of a big airline mm-hmm. like the gentleman who owns JetBlue, who's also very severe on the ADHD spectrum and talks a lot about the fact that he himself had to start his own business because he wasn't really able to get what he needed out of working for others.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to say, I'm not saying it's for everyone, but I'll tell you what, it's for more people than it used to be. And one of the things I know, you know, at Reachability we're working on is not just talking about education as a next step, not just talking about employment as a next step, but actually investigating what would it take to potentially, because of who you are and how you do things, to look at a micro enterprise mm-hmm. for you.
That is so important. And I think for all those people out there who, you know, 15 years ago would have said, oh, geez, I'd love to have my own place, but I can't do that.
Right.
Like, because there was never the supports for those things to get put in place, right? Yeah. Now, entrepreneurship is a huge thing. There are so many supports for people who want to be their own boss, right? And I think that's a great opportunity for people to be looking at, what can I do? Mm-hmm. And sometimes maybe there's some things that they may need, training they need to take. There may be some mentorship that they need to do to get to there. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's always a hard no.
No, right? And I find
talking to some of the people that, you know, have been through, you know, some of the programs here at Reachability, I think that is a great idea. I was talking to an individual, obviously we won't be disclosing names, that was talking about some of their volunteer work mm-hmm. and felt, okay, because they had heard from other people, obviously those people were from the dark ages, that their volunteer work, okay, wouldn't count towards anything. Mm. And my comment was bullshit.
Yeah.
Right. That's not true at all. As a matter of fact, right? We fail greatly, okay, as employers, okay. Well, we don't talk to people about what their volunteer mm-hmm. about their volunteer work, because sometimes some of the things that people are doing in volunteer work, okay, would require, okay, somebody with some pretty extreme education, mm-hmm. right? And they're doing it and doing it very successfully for a long period of time.
They're not doing it in theory, i.e. school, doing it.
Correct.
And that's really empowering.
Which is hysterical that we undervalue the actual practical experience in favor of someone who read many books on the subject.
Right.
Not to completely undervalue education too. We've all been through that road too, but it is a bit silly.
But there are people who are working and have been working for many years in a volunteer capacity and we underestimate, okay? Mm-hmm. Undervalue, I think, is probably the better word. So mm-hmm. I was very clear to this person, absolutely, let's talk about that. Tell me what you've been doing. Oh my gosh, that correlates to, that just opens all kinds of doors. Mm-hmm. And you could see the light going on in that person's eyes, because now all of a sudden, oh, that's a whole nother avenue. Mm-hmm. It could be micro entrepreneurship. It could be actually going to work in a paid position for an NGO. Right? So I think there's so many different, you know, different avenues that we could be doing. And absolutely, as a person with ADHD, Tova, I think your point about, you know, being in charge of your own destiny, mm-hmm. right? Certainly, right?
And I'm glad you mentioned volunteerism, because I didn't. But the truth is, that's why we started a volunteerism program, mm-hmm. because some clients were just not ready to work.
Yeah.
We really saw it, and we don't, and I have a saying, no one goes nowhere. Mm-hmm. So we had to kind of like plug in some of these gaps.
Yes. Yeah.
And the first plug was saying, what do you love to do? Getting them in the volunteerism space allowed them to see that maybe the things they thought they loved to do, they wouldn't. But also, one of my favorite words, transferable skills. Mm-hmm. What did they learn from that volunteer position, and how could it be applied to any job? Because basic core skills like responsibility, mm-hmm. whether that means showing up on time, or if you're to open, you open, you know, words like punctual, mm-hmm. committed, you earn those every day in everything you do. Mm-hmm. You don't need, again, an employer plus a school to tell you you can be responsible. Yeah. So right. I really spend a lot of time talking about transferable skills, especially for folks on the ADHD spectrum, because we've got a little bit of also drama that isn't always discussed, but there is a sense of emotionally taking things to a heavier level than maybe in realistic perspectives mm-hmm. wouldn't see. So I've been obsessing about something, and I'm going to tell the story because it's so funny. But I tried out for this new game show called Battle of the Generations in Canada.
Okay.
And I tried out because it's all pop culture trivia, and I'm pretty good at this stuff. I don't know why my brain likes useless information. It's my thing. Anyway, I have been obsessing about something I commented on in an interview and wondering if that's why they're not getting back to me. Now, as Blake reminded me, is they said it could take months. And of course, it's been not even a month. But I will spend time, for lack of a better word, catastrophizing what I said and focusing on it in a really intensely kind of self-put-down, mm-hmm. self-stigmatizing way. And I've had to show a lot of awareness, self-awareness, and self-management in not letting that stuff bother me. And one of the ways you do it is simply by saying to someone who's on the spectrum that the story, and they'll tell you, yeah, you know what's going on here, right? Like, you're zoning in on something negative that's slowing things down, but you're obsessing on a level that probably someone who's not on the spectrum wouldn't necessarily fall into as quickly. Mm. So we have to know who we are.
Yeah.
I love how you keep saying self-awareness and self-management. I can't even tell you how pleased that makes me, because many people are very self-aware and then they don't do anything.
Don't feel a need for self-management.
Yeah, there's no movement.
That's a missing piece.
So you should just stop being self-aware, because you're just wasting your time.
You're just navel-gazing at that
right?
point. Yeah,
but
yeah.
So I really do like that piece, right? Because I have a lot of time, and I have this little saying, when somebody does what you starts to catastrophize about something that's yet to happen. And this happens all the time in conflict resolution or when I'm doing mediation. And I'll say to them, I hear you, but how about this? We're not going to borrow trouble mm-hmm. for something that has yet to happen.
Yeah.
If it should happen, then let's build a plan around mm-hmm. it, right? Because there's a lot of things.
Don't go seeking worries. You've got enough.
Like, right? Like, yeah. Right? Like, we every
so
day.
So be aware that you have the inclination to seek worry.
Yeah.
So that, again, part of your self-awareness is all those pieces, knowing it,
right.
Writing down, in a sense, who you are to you, and then saying, how am I going to now take that awareness and create a career, whatever that looks like, for me, in whatever frame that I've decided, however I do it. But without that self-management and self-awareness first to follow by self-management, it's not going to be easy. You're going to make it harder for yourself. And my goal is honestly to make it easier for everyone with a disability, because I had to figure out these battles and I'd like to save someone 20 or 30 years with this information.
On that note, and on thinking about awareness and who we'd like to inspire to be a little more aware, I want to make one final comment on entrepreneurship and people with ADHD.
Please.
People with ADHD, as you tell us, Tova, all the time, often have anxiety and depression. It's comorbid with ADHD. Yep. It's very, very common.
I hope you're addressing that whoever you are.
We're not looking at a group of people who are less risk averse and less anxious. These are people who probably have far more anxiety than the average bear when it comes 100%. To starting their own business. And yet they're still going out and doing it. Why? Because in a traditional work environment, you are micromanaging that person. You are looking at them at 2 p.m. and saying, you have a project due in 2 weeks. Why aren't you working on it? Because it's due in 2 goddamn weeks. Like, I will do the best work you will see in your life, but it will not happen for another 4 days. Like,
right.
The lack of understanding is what's driving people into entrepreneurship. Not that we're just chill. We're very far from chill. We're more anxious. And that's
still
the better path.
Which is why we need to be a little bit maybe more in control of our environment, including in a work environment.
Yes.
So I totally hear that. And I'm glad you did bring that up, because it's so important. And I'm sort of on one track here. But the importance of people understanding that you may not have to do a thing about your ADHD once you're out of school. So we say, parents are like, oh my God, she's taking me. I said, don't worry about it. Get through school.
Yeah.
School was built for people in the middle of the road in terms of neuro realities.
Yeah.
It's not built for us. And although there's trials, it's still, we're in this sort of special ed kind of stuff, which you know how I feel about
and
the word.
And to the parents who
special.
Think their kids don't have ADHD because they score really highly in school. Yeah. That's generally women with ADHD and to a weird extent, gay men with ADHD.
Yeah.
We need to
score
prove
higher.
Ourselves. We need to make those marks.
Well, let's remember
we're competitive.
Beyond appropriate.
Yeah.
I'll tell you another element you're going to see in a lot of people on the spectrum, how they put it out there might be very different, but there's a level of competitive. And so let's go back to why are people starting their own businesses? Well, first of all, risk adversity since COVID has gone through the roof. Nobody wants to start a new business.
Yep.
In fact, they've gone down by 50% new business startups since COVID. So if anything, there's an interesting gap there and an opportunity, as you say, Shelley, to get some supports in that micro enterprise environment, because this is something that people who are risk adverse aren't going to do, whereas people on the ADHD spectrum, for all of our anxiety, it's real. And I really want people to know, I do not take medication for ADHD spectrum disorder. I take medication for anxiety because that's what gets me. So please remember that comorbidity that, you know, you're talking about, Blake, is important, because people think, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? No. They're married, those two.
Yeah.
They're married. So be aware, but allow the fact that also why micro-enterprise? Because with your moods and with your management of your own depression, anxiety, as that's working itself out, and it's an ongoing process. You know, you do a combination of medication, in my case, therapy, you know, self-awareness, self-management, reading, trying to really stay in a place, doing meditation. Mm-hmm. Even though people don't know how I do it, I can go into a meditative state quicker than most people. Mm-hmm. And supposedly, research shows people on the ADHD spectrum can actually reach a meditative state quicker, which is surprising to me, considering how, in my case, you know, anxious I am.
I don't think we're expecting that brain silence that so many neurotypical people expect that meditation will bring them. They'll sit there and then they'll have a stray thought and go, oh, I have to start over again. A thought went through my head. Whereas the cyclone of thoughts going through our heads is normal. We're just not paying attention to it or acknowledging it and letting it pass on.
So allowing ourselves to be able to do those things is what's going to empower us, part of that self-awareness, self-management.
Yeah.
But I'm saying now is a great time to be someone who knows yourself, who's ready to get out there and figure out what's going to work for you.
Yeah.
Where your values are. Don't walk out of your house without your own values.
Yeah.
But you've got to know yourself.
Our last note on self-management. We have gone over time.
We always do.
We've hit 3 of our 10 questions that we had put aside.
That's pretty good
proud
for
of
us.
For this topic and this panel, this is actually where I expected
exactly.
To be.
I was actually surprised we got any of the questions, honestly, because I thought we would just jump in and start talking about it.
Mm-hmm. As we often do. Mm-hmm.
But I think we covered a lot of really, really good things.
And rarely spoken about. I want you to know, rarely do I get an opportunity, other than this podcast environment, to get to some of these things that aren't the big generalizations that everyone needs to hear just
correct.
To get out the door.
I'd also like to suggest the idea of a part two, because I think this is a topic that we're just digging into. Why would we not? Don't exactly. Tell me. I see you sitting here laughing as if you don't have more to say on the topic.
I have so much to say. You know that. I'm just always worried I'm going to say the wrong thing.
That's okay. Well, I edit this podcast.
Oh, yeah, right. We edit it. I'd like to run through.
Anything truly egregious is in the blooper reel that we'll release at the end of the season.
Well, I do like the idea of part two from this perspective. We talked a lot about ADHD, okay, and the spectrum. But we just started at the end to talk about the marriage, okay, of other, okay, things that might be impacting people with ADHD, anxiety, depression, right?
Also acknowledging the majority of people with a disability have more than one.
Correct.
I don't actually know anyone who has one disability who knows themselves. I know people who say, I have a sore wrist, and I'm going, are you going to mention the ADHD and the depression or no?
Exactly. Yeah. So I think it might be good to explore from that how, because that is another way that even people themselves, as you said, aren't realizing, and sometimes it's actually not their ADHD that's manifesting the impact in the workplace or impact in the social situation or impact in the community.
Yeah.
It's the actual anxiety.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or depression or whatever else. Yeah. Okay.
How it manifests.
So I love that for a second idea. So
we can also drill down on what the employer can do, because we talked a lot about our self-control in this one, but
I don't want to say what I'm going to think because I need to have a separate
big surprise.
Give one little hint. Please don't ever call an employee lazy.
Right. I need to have a separate conversation.
There are lazy employees. I see that face. I'm not saying that they don't exist.
Right. I'm not saying anything.
However, you don't need to.
Folks,
I can hear your thoughts over
here. I'm just sitting here quietly.
No, I think lazy is thrown out by employers who don't understand ADHD people too often.
Well,
you're giving me a face. Is that something?
No, it's just funny because I've never been called lazy. I've been called late. Mm-hmm. I've been called a few things, but not really lazy because my energy is so high. Not everybody's, by the way, is.
No.
My energy is so high that people can't quite come to a place where they could say that word to me. Yeah. I've actually heard so, except my mother. My mother described me, when I asked her to describe me, she described me as lazy, which I thought was fascinating because nobody sees it, but she's right. I would never clean up my room.
Yeah.
Right. I would never put things away.
Yeah.
She would see a trail behind me,
right,
you know, and she would say, you're lazy because you're not picking it up. So you're right. Yeah. It's something I heard from my mother who, by the way, in my opinion, hello,
that
apple
ADHD
not falling
as well.
Far from tree.
Yeah, exactly. I can relate to that.
So I think there's it's not a part three to this session about employers.
I think we're already in
we'll
part
just do
two.
A whole season on ADHD.
I think there's a whole other thing that we can do about training for employers.
Yes.
Dealing with disabilities.
I also want to say we got to talk about TikTok and ADHD next time, because there's so much information pouring out. And I want to say to everybody, there's a lot coming out. It's not all correct. I don't care what you think, who's who. We don't know anything. If it rings true to you, great. Allow it to investigate further, but don't just take the words.
Don't
and if it doesn't ring true, don't sit there thinking, why am I not fitting in this
because
box?
Nobody
Do I not
fits.
Have this?
It, we are outside the box from day one.
Yes.
And let's end the session with how we started, right? That it's not one size fits all, right? Mm-hmm. Just because you have or know one person that has ADHD, don't make the assumption that everybody else that you meet is going to have those exact same set of circumstances. It's more the rainbow, right? The spectrum of ADHD, because I think here in
your workplace.
What
do you call the rainbow without the color? Is that what you
mean? I'd say it to sort of say it's not so simple, you know? It's not an easy rainbow. It's not a pretty yay rainbow.
Yeah.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah. It's not quite so cheerful and sparkly some days, but
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
Here we are at the end of the podcast.
World's longest podcast.
We stayed on task kind of
We did stay on task. Tova, thank you so much it's always a pleasure having you. And I know talking about this subject that's near and dear to your heart, but thank you for being with us today. We're looking forward to part 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Yep.
And
seasons 2 through 8. Yep.
And as always, thank you for myself, Shelly, and my co-host.
Oh, I'm Blake. Hi. Thanks. It's been nice to be here.
Thank you all.
Thanks for listening to Within Our Reach. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next episode. If you have an idea for an episode topic you'd like us to cover, or if you'd like to join us as a guest on the podcast, reach out to us at withinourreach@reachability.org.